Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024 to everyone. This is USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is Chase rejoining after a couple weeks off joined today by Nick and by Jason. Nick, how are you doing? Jason, how are you doing?
I'm great, Chase. Yeah, been a minute here, but always good to be back.
Good to be with you guys. We got a full roster now and lots to talk about.
We do have a full roster, and we're kind of holding off after the Desmond Clark commitment and wanting to get that 13th guy. We weren't sure who it was going to be. We were hoping, I think there was a hope that it might be DJ Wagner. For the record, DJ Wagner is still uncommitted. We'll talk about that in a second. And then it developed over the next about 10 days or so that some other players had taken visits. But one day we had visits from Kevin Patton Jr. and another recruit who we'll talk about in a second. But ultimately, Patton from University of San Diego and before that, Rancho Christian High School in kind of the Temecula area, where the Mobley brothers went, was the one who committed. So I'll start with you, Nick. What do you think about the last, we'll cover the entire roster in a second, but what do you think about the commitment of Patton?
It's a good one for sure. He's really long, about 6'8", wing player, kind of plays like a guard, super athletic, has vertical pop, has had flashes against really good teams. And he's, you know, just finished his freshman year. So you've got 3 years of eligibility, but he's got an NBA skill set, you know, jumping up in class. It's going to be interesting to see how he does at the high major level, but, you know, in terms of guys that can block shots, get steals and have a chance to shoot threes, he's really intriguing. Reminds me a little bit of Max Agbonpolo, but a bit twitchier and, you know, has already shown more promise as a jump shooter in his first year than Agbonpolo did in his career.
So, Jason, I'm going to ask you a couple things to kind of opine on. One is, before Patton kind of emerged as one of the key guys we were looking at, another name that emerged, which was A.J. Hogarth, the point guard from Michigan State, who has one COVID season left, had been starter there for, you know, more than 2 years. Kind of a key cog in a team that had, you know, gone to the tournament a couple times, beat us pretty badly in the tournament the season before last. He ended up, I think, ends up at Vanderbilt. I don't know if he even made it on a visit to USC. His price tag ended up getting pretty high. I want to see what your thoughts were on Patton compared to Hogarth and for this last spot. And then just kind of, you mentioned that on KenPom, there was comparisons to certain players for Patton's freshman year. Actually looks a lot like Robert Covington's freshman year at, was he at Tennessee State? Tennessee State. Obviously now a veteran NBA player, has played like a decade in the NBA. You know, what your thoughts are on comps. You know, I had mentioned, you know, is he going to be more like a Josh Childress for Stanford, or is he going to be more like a Shaquan Aaron? So anyway, that's a lot thrown at you. So what are your thoughts on all that, Jason?
So in terms of what to do with that last roster spot, gun to my head, I probably would have taken a pure point guard, and I think AJ would have filled that role quite nicely. We'll talk about the kind of strengths and weaknesses of the roster overall in just a bit, but you know, certainly ball handling and having a primary assist guy is something that I think the roster lacks. And so I would have tried to fill that with a pure point guard. However, another thing that the roster lacks is kind of a defense first jack of all trades, blocks, steals guy. I think projecting out what this team looks like, it's significantly better at the offensive end than the defensive end. And so when you're looking for, you know, five-man units and trying to play out, like, if I need a stop or I need to put somebody on somebody that's on a run for the other team right now, like, this is the kind of guy you want to have on the bench to be able to put in the game situationally to really disrupt things defensively. And so, you know, I'm perfectly fine with them using the last spot on someone like this. You know, I think if they had just gone for like another guy in the same height range, everyone's saying the team is full of threes and fours, right? And it was an offense first guy. That would feel redundant to me, but this does not. This actually feels like it does make sense, and he is filling a need on the team.
So let's talk a little bit, Nick, maybe about how this roster now with Patton as the last spot fills out. First off, on Patton, you know, it is going to be key to see like how much we're going to be relying on him. I know obviously Musselman wanted to fill this one roster spot with a impact player, a guy who is going to, you know, not just somebody to put at the back of the bench. Patton is definitely a guy who everyone, you know, we're hoping is on an upswing. I do have to say, to his, you know, to his credit on that score, he played better in the conference play for San Diego than out of conference play. And the WCC is a decent conference. And the funny thing about that Steve Lavin San Diego team, because, you know, Lavin has not really had hardly any success since he left UCLA. And this team, you know, San Diego has kind of been middling along. But one thing to note in his second season at San Diego is that that now Lavin took the team from 4-12 last year to 7-9 this year. And that's like, okay, well, so what? They're 7-9 and it's, you know, WCC after all. But they did have an overall winning record this season, which is not something San Diego's had a lot of in recent years. So maybe there's a slight upswing here. And maybe, you know, you can say, look, Patton contributed to that. He actually did average 10 points a game in conference play. I think, you know, when he was basically the third leading scorer on that team. I think he started all but one conference games for San Diego. And you start looking at his highlights, and yeah, there could be some things there. So maybe he would end up, maybe not to start the season as a starter, but the hope is that by the end of the season, maybe he's starting at the two on this roster. What are your thoughts on all that, Nick?
I could see it. He's definitely one of the highest upside players that we have coming in for this team. And just to put a few numbers on it, he was 125th in the country in block rate. And that's basically as a guard. He's a big guard. You know, also 291 steal rate. So he gets the blocks and steals. And, you know, you mentioned the upswing in his stats and efficiencies in league play. He led the WCC in block rate in league play and was fourth in steal rate. And his shooting percentage has also improved significantly. You know, shot 85% from the free throw line in conference play. Before that, he was, let's see, 15 for 31. So he was sub 500 from the line, and then became, you know, fifth best free throw shooter in the WCC in league. 2-point percentage improved. Threes were about the same. But, you know, you could definitely tell free throw rate, he got better. He was getting to the line more. He can pass a little bit and decent on the glass too. So I wouldn't even, you know, it's a small sample size in the grand scheme of things, just one conference season. But I think it's particularly notable when you're talking about a kid who's a freshman and figuring out college basketball and, you know, is starting to get a feel for it towards the end of his first year.
Yeah. So on that, Jason, you could just kind of maybe even take a step back, talk about just the roster in general, and maybe even talk a little bit about how you think Patton fits in as far as what his role would be and whether or not, you know, the thought would be to get him to whether or not he's a starter right away. Maybe not. Would he be a starter is the hope by the time we get to February or in March in the season.
Yeah, for me, he's not quite a starter. I think there is still something to be desired on the offensive end of the floor. Although you could, you could say, hey, we've got enough offensive talent, we want to balance out the roster. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But like, as I look at it, I see him as a rotational piece that's probably, somewhere between 6 and 9 on the depth chart. It's just going to be hard to get minutes on this team. There's so many guys fighting for minutes, and if you think you're going to put Desmond Claude at the one because there is no pure point guard, right? Like he's not going to play there. If you were going to put Chibuzo Agbo at the two, like it's hard to see me playing him over Agbo. That three spot, if you want to call it Terrence Williams, like that there are probably some minutes there. I tried to model out the whole team. It was very hard to allocate minutes for all five positions and still let everybody play a little bit. I had Patton end up at about 8 to 10 minutes a game. So we'll see. Like again, useful player, young, right? One of the few guys on this roster that is going to be having remaining eligibility after this season. So certainly time for him to grow into a role with this team.
Okay, so we're going to take a little aside right now. We have a special guest to join us. I think on an earlier podcast, you've heard us talk about the account SB Unfurled. SB, he can confirm, but I think stands for Saint Bonaventure. He's mainly a kind of a Saint Bonaventure fan. His account on Twitter, though, is an amazing account that talks about all kinds of aspects of college basketball, not just Saint Bonaventure things, and amongst other things that he does, he has a comprehensive rating of like all the players in college basketball. And he also, of course, then creates these transfer lists, which are rankings, which are just amazing and really helpful. And we used in earlier podcasts, we talked about his compared to those of the site rankings, things like 24/7 Sports and on three, as well as Evan Miakawa's ranking, so and Bart Torvik. So, without further ado, SB Unfurled, thank you so much for joining us.
What's going on, guys? Glad to join you.
I just your stuff, your data is amazing. I encourage everyone to check out your account, and there's a link to your website there as well. Just maybe you could just tell us a little bit. How did you get into doing this kind of like heavy data analysis on college basketball, the individual players?
Good question. Well, my account is it's very visual based, so I think that's kind of why it gained some traction. It's a little different than the normal write-ups and stuff like that. So I love doing data visualization. I have a background in graphic design, so I do game previews and I like doing game recaps and showing a different side that might be a little unique, especially in A10 corners, Atlantic 10, the conference that Saint Bonaventure is in. So in doing that, I wanted to come up with my own kind of rating system for my game previews, where I could display the players, not just who the players are, but how good they are. So a few years back, I did my own, like, hey, what is important in basketball as far as advanced metrics go? I kind of scaled it to a 0 to 10 rating system, just so in my visual previews, which if you scroll back far enough, you could probably see some, so I could kind of compare what players are the best, what players to look for. And I started off doing it just for Saint Bonaventure pre-portal. And then once the portal hit and there's 2,000 plus players now annually joining the transfer portal, I said, hey, I have this awesome, what I believe is the most accurate player rating system in all of college basketball. Why not use it to show who is doing well in the portal? And I know it would take a lot of manual work just because of the volume of players transferring now. But if you keep up with it day by day, it's not too bad. So basically, I took my pretty accurate rating scale and I am doing it over all 362 teams. I'm showing the 31 different conferences, how they compare, and just looking at basically players in and players out. So you're looking at net gains. You can look at raw gains or raw losses. So lo and behold, I ranked all 32 teams by net gains, and USC is numero uno.
Yeah, that is interesting. It's, I guess, not completely shocking considering that we had to bring in all these new players. So let me ask you this. Did you have your own kind of like statistics or data background, or because this is kind of something you brushed up on to develop your formula? Just to talk about that process a little bit.
No real background. It's all kind of just self-taught. I wasn't ever really a math guy, honestly. Ironically enough, out of college, I got a job at a bank and I started learning math a lot that way, and got a lot better at analyzing things. But, the key is not just taking the data, but making it visually appealing on social media, which kind of drives engagement and gets people a little bit more interested. No, I don't think many college basketball fans at least want to stare at like numbers on a spreadsheet. So it was important to take that stuff and make it visually appealing. But yeah, as I never intended my account to become what it became, but as it kind of evolved naturally, people were interested in that stuff. So not only, recruiting news and things like that, but also a lot of stats across the conference and across the country. So I was kind of just self-taught. Hey, these are the advanced metrics. This is kind of what's important. I played basketball my whole life. I've always loved basketball. So I already kind of had a background in that, but it was all about weighing the correct stats and, what I feel is important as a player. You don't have to take my word for it. Before I came on, my ratings go all the way back to, I believe, 2008. So I did, I ranked every USC player that I had in my database all the way back to 2008. If you guys have any guesses as to who maybe some of the top five or top 10 you think would be, because I don't sit around watching USC. That's long past my bedtime. I can read off the top 10, or you guys can maybe guess on who might be on there.
When I was telling these guys about you, SB Unfurled, I did the same exercise, but it's been a couple months, and now I have to remember. I think Evan Mobley single season has to be in the top two or three, right?
So interesting. In my ratings, I say it's 0 to 10, but anyone who hits 10 or more, it should be in that season at least considered for National Player of the Year. So if you see a 10 up, that should be a National Player of the Year consideration. Evan Mobley is actually the only USC player to max out my ratings at 10.14. Yeah, he would be number one.
And I would think that Onyeka Okongwu would have his single season would be up there, if not like close to 10, maybe closer to, in the higher part of the top 10 for SC.
He is number four. USC 9.3. So yes, very, very close. And 9.0 is like, should be all American consideration, right? In the A-10, 7.0 is like all conference. 9.0 would be all American. Like Obi Toppin was exactly 10.0. He's still playing for the Pacers if you're watching the NBA playoffs. So yeah, Evan Mobley was number one and Okongwu was number four.
And what about Vucevic?
Number three, 9.4.
Okay. So we're getting...
Yeah. Yeah, so you got three of the top four. Any guesses on who number two is?
Maybe a Taj Gibson season as like a junior or senior.
He was number five, very close, 9.12.
Is Jordan McLaughlin senior year in the mix at all?
He was number eight. Yeah, he's top okay. 10.
Yeah, and I'm sure D'Anthony Melton probably graded out pretty well too his freshman year.
But they shut him down. He couldn't play for like the last however many games, right?
Him on my top. Are all players who played 40% or more a minute. So you guys are only missing in the top five. No, your first four guesses were for the top five. You're missing number two.
Yeah, I don't think it's DeMar, right? Like he was here for 1 year and it statistically wasn't that great.
I would guess maybe Benny Boatwright's senior year. Is that possible?
You know, you're very close. He was number seven. He was 8.42. Okay. So you guys are hitting all the top ones. So Like I said, don't take my word for it. You guys are the experts, and these are the statistics bearing out in front of you.
So there you go.
What about last season? Not this season, but the season before last for Boogie Ellis.
Boogie Ellis was number six, so you guys got six of the top seven.
Okay.
Isaiah Mobley's last year
was Jason's guess.
Or Isaiah Metu was Metu was 11. Mobley was 9th. Okay. So you guys are nailing.
Could it be Kobe Johns? Kobe Johnson's
OJ Mayo.
OJ Mayo, you got it.
Number there he is. Okay.
It was just the cutoff year. Okay. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And I would have to go back and look where he ranked nationally that year. You guys can look on my chart if you want. I don't want to waste all my time on this, but he was probably very, very close to the top of the country that year.
So, we were going to ask, we want to ask you about just kind of the, your rating system compared to, on the one hand, the fan sites like 24/7 Sports and On3 versus Evan Miyakawa versus even Bart Torvik. Mm-hmm. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think for like 24/7 Sports and On3, a lot of it is high school recruiting ranks. I was actually looking at St. Bonaventure. Some of the guys they have, like our big man Chad Venning, who just went to Boston College, is a 9 out of 10, which I do not agree with. I like Venning a lot, but he is not. Asa Esambus was a 8.9 out of 10, which I also don't agree with that. But there are some other players who have no rankings at all. Their position is wrong, like Moses Flowers. He graduated last year, but they don't have any ranking for him. They have him listed as a point guard, which is incorrect. He was more of a 2 or a 3 man. So, I'm not trying to talk crap about, like, there's so many players, and a lot of these recruiting sites are doing it every day, and they're working a lot of them. If you're outside the top 100 high school recruits, it's kind of a crapshoot, and even the top 100 are crapshoots. That's why you see coaches using the portal and not using high school as recruiting as much. But there are tons of 4-stars, 5-stars who don't pan out. So to still be using their high school ratings after they have D1 experience is going to give you inaccurate results, in my opinion. So that's more, or it's just guys, I saw this guy play in a game, I think he's really good, I'm going to put him in my top 10. A little more, there's kind of bias there. Mine are, I believe, very unbiased. There's way too much work to make it biased, so I have no interest in that. But as far as Evan Mia, I love a lot of what he does. The kill shot is really good. He's got a lot of really cool visuals. His player ratings they're decent. Don't get me wrong, I think they're a little too heavy on like box plus minus. So if you have a guy who's kind of a role player on a really, really good team who's just dominating, that player is going to look way better than maybe a really good player on a mediocre team. So it's more like it's weighed more heavily toward the team's success and not necessarily individual players. Bartorvik's Porpagatu is pretty accurate, but just judging by my eye test, I look at his stuff all the time. His site is great. I wouldn't be able to do what I do without his site. But if I'm comparing mine versus his based on the eye test, there's always a little bit of wonkiness. I feel like with his, there'll be a guy in the top 5 who I'm like, okay, that guy should not be in there. I've tweaked it constantly over the last 4 or 5 years. I watch a ton of college hoops, so this isn't just me looking at a spreadsheet. I'm like, oh, this guy definitely is good, and then I look at my ratings, and that usually bears it out. There is limited wonkiness, I will say, with my ratings. So if you're using this data across the entire country when it comes to a couple thousand players or like 7,000 players over 5 years, like I did last year, looking at some data, it's going to be probably, in my opinion, probably the most accurate you'll find in college basketball.
Yeah. And just before, I'm going to throw it to Jason and Nick here for some questions. But before I do, I just want to, on the fan sites, I actually think they should just stop doing the transfer portal ranking. And one of the reasons I say that is because they are so devoted to high school recruiting in general and geared toward that, especially with football mainly as being their kind of like their focal point. they are just completely unable to kind of relatively rate a transfer versus a high school player. And you know, they really overvalue high school players immensely compared to the transfers. And a perfect example of this is I went back and looked. Bronny James for USC entered last season with a just kind of their you know, their rating system of a 0.95 as a you know, college freshman coming in, and we knew coming in that he was going to have all kinds of issues, putting aside his health issues. And Cameron Spencer, the kind of combo guard who transferred from Rutgers to UConn, who, if you just watched him play in college, you knew this guy was a killer. He had a rating from 24/7 as a transfer as a 0.91. So they have Bronny as significantly better than Cam Spencer entering last season. And of course, you know, Spencer goes on to basically be, you know, All-American level, maybe a consensus second team All-American. But it just kind of is one example of many, a thousand I could go through, where they really should just kind of stop their transfer portal like ratings at all, in my opinion, until they can just get it right, because they're so far off right now, it's to the point of absurdity, and they just so overvalue high school players and that and their kind of high school performance compared to their college performance. I just think it's ridiculous. But off my soapbox, Jason, you have any more questions for SB Unfurled?
I do. You've become a little bit of a online lightning rod in college basketball circles, because it seems like a lot of the talking heads in the college basketball industry like to kind of say, you know, all is well and the transfer portal goes both ways, and, you know, people coming down from higher level programs that aren't seeing the minutes can go to the mid majors and vice versa. And so this is a win-win for everyone, but your numbers tell a very different story. So I'd like to just give you the floor to tell us kind of what are you seeing in terms of inflows and outflows of talent to the power leagues versus some of the mid majors and low majors.
Oh, where do I even begin? I think, you know, a lot of the players who are transferring down, like St. Bonaventure got a DeSante Bowen from Iowa. He kind of started the year off pretty good, started a few games and fell off. A lot of the guys like that are transferring down are guys that are, you know, pushed out of their P5 programs, you know, at team meetings at the end of the year, coaches, and this happens at Bonas too. Coaches will say, hey, you know, probably not seeing too many minutes. No, don't know how much you're in the plans for next year. Might be good to enter the portal. And they do that so they can get better players from, you know, wherever it is. It doesn't have to be a non-P5. The P5s are also playing a musical chairs game with a lot of their own players. So just by common sense, even not looking at the raw data, you would say, hey, guys who are transferring down weren't good enough to play there, and the guys who are transferring up are obviously, not every single one, but by and large, going to be better than the guys they're, you know, replacing. So it's, you know, I don't know if they actually believe this, if the Seth Davises of the world truly believe this, or if, you know, I don't know. I'm not in his head, so I'm not sure, but, you know, it just looking at some of the players who make these all conference teams, or if you have an A-10 player of the year, a Missouri Valley player of the year, to say that those guys, all these all conference players from, you know, the American or the A-10 or the West Coast Conference are just the same as, you know, these, the ninth man or the 10th man on a Big Ten bench, that's just not true. And, you know, the data bears that out. The SEC and Big Ten this year have netted twice as much as even the Big 12 or Big East. The only four teams who have a positive incoming rating as far as player value are the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Big East. And the ACC lost a ton of players early. And it was kind of like, I was looking at it, I said, oh my God, the ACC is way back, it was like 25th or 26th out of the 31 conferences. they lost a ton of players, but I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting to watch. I think as time goes on in the next few weeks, the ACC will slowly climb and make up for all those losses because they can. Those, you know, the Dukes of the world, if they get off to a slow start, they can recoup those players. There are good players still available. Lo and behold, slowly a few weeks later, the ACC is already up to seventh in the country. So I kind of had a little prediction there and it was right. I feel like eventually they will be another one in the net positive. But, you know, by and large, and even if they were correct, which they're not, and I am still open to debating whatever his name is that we talked about briefly.
Mike DeCourcy.
Nothing against him. I just think, if you're going to cover the sport, you know, look into it a little bit more. This is not my full-time job. And I can kind of just look at the writing on the wall and see what's going on. But even if they were correct and non P5s could get, you know, oh, we got a player from Iowa. Well, that I still don't think that's good for the sport. Fans are checking out. I don't know if you guys have noticed it. I have definitely noticed it in A10 circles. My buddy works with a Duke grad, and even he is like, this is ridiculous. I am not as interested as I once was. To not have the program stability, to not, you know, mid-majors, one of the things they could do is find those diamonds in the rough. You know, Bonas has found a ton. Andrew Nicholson, Jalen Adams, the list goes on. You find these guys that may have been overlooked for one reason or another, and you get them as a freshman and you develop them over 2, 3, 4 years. They learn the program, they buy into the culture, they become part of the community. The fans get to know them, they know their story. That to now just have annual free agency, fans are checking out because they, you know, the one thing that made college sports, I think, in my opinion, a little more relatable or charming was that, like, hey, we know these guys. These guys are part of my alma mater. They are, you know, going to the same classes and professors I had. They're eating in the same. Now it's just they're here for 4, 5, 6 months and they're gone, you know. And I even if their opinion was true, I feel like it's just not good for the sport and the sport's longevity to have all of this turnover with. There's no structure. There's no program building. And the one thing that we kind of could rely on as a program like St. Bonaventure developing these guys over 4 years is gone now. And the rug has been totally pulled out from under us.
Yeah. I just want to build on to what you're saying. It's almost now, you know, it really feels like, you know, the mid-majors are acting as a farm system for the P5s. And, you know, the way you see it, even when we discuss players that came from Power Five and then dropped down to mid-major, some of those guys are the ones then that bolt from the mid-major. And I'm thinking of guys like Matt Cross, right, who really didn't find his footing at Louisville or Miami, then got more so in Massachusetts. And now, you know, he has success. He's gone. A guy like Jameer Watkins from Florida State, who, you know, was up and coming, kind of was developing at VCU, but got to Florida State and really hit. And then now, you know, he's moved, you know, he bolted from VCU. St. Thomas, who USC got, he had been at Loyola Chicago, which is itself a mid-major, but kind of like, you know, was, it had been in the Final Four and kind of, you know, a high level mid-major in some respects. Certainly he went there, I think, in part because of the Final Four. And, you know, he was having problems there. Goat drops down to Northern Colorado, does better there, and then he bolts out. So it's they're really kind of being used, these mid-majors, as farm systems. And once the guys actually hit, they're gone, you know, that which is, you know, kind of stinks for those schools. But anyway, any, what about you, Nick? You got any questions for ESPN for
all? I do have, since you mentioned St. Thomas real quick though, I do have one more thing, because I was actually going to bring him up specifically. Jim Root, who's a three-man weave guy, love their work. I buy their stuff, and, you know, I'm a big fan. But he said after I put out, oh, this is how much the power conferences are gaining exponentially versus non-power conferences via the portal this year, he said, well, hold on, this is just projecting. There's no, you're not showing data that these transfers actually did end up being good? What if you looked at last year, so 2024 stats of how the transfers who moved in 2023 did? So going from 2023 to 2024, does that show the same thing? And yes, it did. The top five were all the P5s. The Big 12 was like far and away number one. But so I looked at probably 1,000 or so transfers from last year to see how they performed this year. And St. Thomas was the number one most improved. He jumped, his rating on my scale jumped 5.55 points. So he was a 2.4 at Loyola. He went to Northern Colorado and he was almost an 8.0. So huge jump for him. But I went back and looked, and the data showed again that even after you look, you know, retroactively, it still shows that the P5, especially the Big 12 this year, gained the most from the transfer portal.
Yeah. Nick, you got any questions for SB Unfold?
Yeah, thanks again for jumping on, SB. One note on your ACC point too that I think is kind of interesting is, even though, you know, they rose as you expected, you know, they're still behind the Big Ten and the SEC. So not to say that they're a mid-major level conference now, but the trend hasn't been good with them in recent years here. So I did find that pretty interesting. I agree with you, like the free agency is pretty hectic, but you know, if you've got a guy like Great Osabor, right, and Washington goes and offers him $2 million, like, is he supposed to turn that down? And how do you propose, like, fixing the free agency system to keep mid-majors, you know, at a competent level without limiting the earning potential of these guys?
So NIL is one thing. I'm fine with that happening. Like, if players should get paid. The bigger issue is the unlimited transfers. And I could even live with, they had the one-time transfer, which I also did a graph on that, you know, the number of transfers doubled after they added the one-time transfer, but then they got rid of the one-time transfer. So a program like St. Bonaventure, when you had the one-time transfer, would recruit, what we did was recruit a lot of freshmen from lower conferences, because if you're getting them to come to you and use their one-time transfer, then you do kind of have them for hopefully a couple of years. And then if they graduate, by all means, transfer again, you earned it. The problem though, with unlimited transfers, people seem on Twitter to forget this is still higher education. And every time you transfer schools, on average, you lose 13 credits. So when you have guys transferring two or three times, graduation rates and what this is supposed to be about are going to drop. And I think they only do graduation rates every like 5 or 6 years. So there might be still a few years before we actually see that data. But if you have all these guys going to four schools in 4 years, three schools in 4 years, a lot of them aren't going to graduate. And I feel like a lot of them are getting used, by handlers, or, you know, they're getting a lot of bad advice. A couple of Bona players this year, in my opinion, got a lot of bad advice despite having good offers to stay and being fan favorites. So as far as what I would do, I think the solution now is to set up mutually agreed upon 1 to 4 year contracts. And I think naturally, if you do that, program and player who have similar goals are going to naturally find each other. You're going to have better fits. I feel like you're not going to have so many guys being used and eventually not getting degrees. So if you have a guy like, hey, I know he is here on a 2 year contract or a 3 year contract. And if a coach leaves or is fired, contract void, you can transfer without penalty. If you graduate, you're free to transfer. But having unlimited transfers, not just bad for the sport, but it's not going to be good for the players who are, you know, supposed to be on a track to a degree.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. And, you know, we've had some instances with USC guys just having them, you know, having a tough time getting into school just because they've had the multiple transfers thing and never graduated from the previous school. You know, one thing I think that could be pretty interesting on the contract note is, you know, you see guys like Jeff Linder, right, at the mid-major level going from Wyoming and taking an associate head coach job at Texas Tech. And presumably there's a buyout there. I wonder if you could set up the contracts where the player has to pay the school a buyout if he leaves, just given that, you know, if he is leaving, it means he upped his stock to a point where, you know, the high major is interested in him at that point. So lots of different ways to structure it, but, you know,
you could do a lot. And, you know, by saying, oh, as people would say, oh, they're stuck, that they sign a contract, they're stuck there. And no, but if you can still transfer, but if you do, it's a year in residence, and a year in residence has a lot of really good benefits. Getting acquainted with your major or the team or the program, the community, catching up on credits that you missed out of. There's a lot of really good things that can come out of a year in residence. Those are the changes that I would make at this point. And number one, in my opinion, until we got the private equity stuff today, number one is the unlimited transfers. I think that's a much bigger issue than NIL is right now.
Jason, you have any last questions for SBN for World?
Yeah, one last thing, and you can let us know if you can't answer this. But are you in touch with any coaches? I know that like some of the other guys, you know, Torvix and Ken Palms and Evans of the world are like in touch with coaching staffs. I'm curious if anyone's reached out to you just because you've got such a comprehensive source of information. And we were talking on our last episode that I was on about, you know, what would a business model look like to, you know, serve coaches that are trying to identify who's going to work and not work in the transfer portal. And I think you've got a pretty good jump on us if you wanted to try to monetize this.
There was one coach, an assistant coach, I think last year that reached out. He saw my work. I think it was a Mac school. And then I'm in touch with Bona coaches about recruiting and stuff like that. But no, other than that, there has not been. They might be on there looking themselves, but I have not had anyone reach out to me. But you know, that's, if you guys want to collab on something, I'm more than happy to.
Yeah, we better talk business offline, but I think that's, you know, look, potentially it's, you know, if this Wild West is going to stay the way it is, you know, there's going to be people that are going to have to, you know, they're really going to take advantage of this. And yeah, some coaches, look, I'm sure that the attitude amongst a lot of coaches is going to be like, hey, I'll do my own evals, thank you, I can look at the video. But like, at some point in time, the really smart coaches are going to be like, okay, I trust my eval, but let's go look at the numbers. And whose numbers do I trust? Who has the reliable numbers? Who has the track record to show that they know what they're talking about? Well, Nick, do you have anything else for SBN Forum?
That's all I got. Thanks again, SB.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man, for joining us. I'd love to have you on again sometime if you're available.
Yeah, of course. And I got the USC roster up right now. St. Thomas, Josh Cohen, Agbo, Claude, those were the top four guys that you got. Brownie James was near the bottom of the guys that you lost. So my rating had Brownie at a 4.11.
Yes, I think that's probably accurate. Probably accurate. Well, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much again.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon. Later.
So transitioning back to just talking about how the roster looks as we as we're coming up on the season here, maybe I'll give you each the opportunity to lay out who you think will be our five starters that we head into the season, and maybe how that may adjust over time, because obviously Musselman is known for changing up his playing time, changing up his starters. So I guess I'll let you go first, Nick.
Don't think my opinion's changed too much since the last episode. I think Patton's the only guy we've added in that time span, but I would stick with Desmond Claude, Chibuzo Agbo, St. Thomas, Terrence Williams, and Josh Cohen. Do think that Patton, if everything really clicks for him, he could push push into the mix there towards conference play, but would go with those five for now. And, you know, really, really impressed with this kind of second wave we've built up here. Should have plenty of depth.
Where are you at, Jason?
Same five guys. I tried to do, we can talk about, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of this team, but just as I was trying to lay out the minutes, I alluded to this a little bit earlier before SBN furled, right? Like just trying to put, you've got 200 minutes in a game, right? You've got five positions and 40 minutes. And so just trying to figure out on a per game basis how many minutes to give each of these guys. And, you know, Moss tends to use his bench a little less than the average coach. So if you figure Musselman teams on average 27-28% bench minutes, right? So that means that you've now given out 73% of your minutes to those five guys. So you've got, you know, 27% of the minutes to split between the rest of this very deep roster. That's 54 total minutes to give to everyone else. So like when I did this, right now you're starting to get into men 6 through 12, right? I have 12 minutes for Matt Noling, 10 minutes for Rashawn Agee, 10 minutes for Slacker, 10 minutes for Pope, 8 minutes for Patton, and 2 minutes for each of the freshmen, and a goose egg for Harry Hornery. Like, it's just tough. There's so many guys. But I think, you know, hopefully this becomes like a cream rises to the top situation, and it kind of plays itself out that the best players play.
Yeah, I absolutely, there, it is very, very packed in there. Let me just say, I think now that we have Patton, my opinion, because I was anticipating that we would bring in a point guard or maybe bring in a big, the fact that we brought in Patton is kind of like a combo, you know, it's kind of like a guard slash wing. I think we actually may now start Slackert in the backcourt with Claude. Now that could, I think they're probably waiting for practice to see if Slacker could play at that level. And then that would allow kind of a rotation on the backcourt of maybe Patton as a two. That's just a guess. And then we would start St. Thomas and Agbo at the three and four. But of course I'm not sure about this, but that's just kind of where my head is at this point. One more thing we should probably just address. I my guess is that we're done. This is the roster. It's not going to change, but DJ Wagner is still out there. And I think he's looking for like the right situation for himself. Arkansas was absolutely convinced he's going to commit there. There's crystal balls to that effect. I still think that very well is more likely than not that, you know, he could end up there. I know that Trilly Donovan even made a reference to like, there's not a lot of other options for him, but you know, UCLA has 14 players, you know, so it does make you think a little bit. Nick, you have any thoughts on that? Would you still be interested in taking a look at him? You know, even though we have, you know, 13 guys, if we could somehow pull it off.
You know, I guess it depends on whether the money's fungible, right? Like, you know, if you could get a booster to do it that, you know, you couldn't punt that money towards next year, then, you know, I think sure. He's a talented player, McDonald's All-American, had some flashes. I think because he was limited by injury last year, I think that hurt some of his explosiveness. So that there might be some untapped upside there. But at the same time, you know, if he's going to cost $500,000 or $1 million or something like that, you know, I'd rather just stick with the guys that we currently have. And as Jason mentioned too, like minutes are going to be at a premium here, and that's before you throw DJ into the mix. So yeah, I think probably just price tag dependent, but pretty happy with the group that we currently have.
Yeah, we already are, you know, you already laid it out there, Jason, that there's not a lot of minutes. But if DJ came calling, what would you say to him?
Yes, I'm taking him. you know, it's interesting, right? Like, I tried to look at, you know, I do these statistical deep dives, and I looking at like different rating systems, right? And we benefit in the systems that value, right, prior production, as we talked about with SB Unfurled. Your Bart Torvix and your folks of that ilk, but where we kind of get dinged a little bit is we had excelled previously in like high school recruiting dependent systems, and I think we talked about how Evan Miakala's ratings are like a hybrid, but they still weight toward high school and towards stars, and so not that you want to take someone that is a great high school player that hasn't produced in college, but I think it almost like kind of rounds you out in a way, like you're hedging your bets a little bit. You've got to, right, because you're taking a risk the other way too. You bring in a bunch of established production, but maybe it comes from a low major, mid-major level. You don't know how it will translate up versus someone that has played at the highest level, but due to injuries or just, you know, being a freshman, there's nothing wrong with that, didn't quite have this season that they were supposed to have. But if you just do it on a pure talent standpoint, would immediately be one of the two or three most talented players on the team. So I kind of like Wagner from that perspective, just to kind of give a different skill set, a different kind of experience coming into it, that would kind of round out this roster. And I do think it just still cries out for like a primary ball handler, but I've been a broken record about that. So yes, I would take him. And if I were looking at this roster and trying to think about, you know, being a little bit critical of Mus, I think it's frankly a great roster for a year one. But if I were thinking about what would I try to do differently, I think you look at like the bottom two or three guys on the roster and say, you know what, like, could we have parlayed those guys into one more big fish? Because I think it's a really deep team with not as much high end talent at the top.
Yeah, I think the one thing that Patton does beyond, you know, kind of provide kind of deep, this defensive like a toolkit player, he does give us some youth, which that, you know, you do want to have some stability. And now you never know, the all three guys who have eligibility after this season could, or this upcoming season could leave, but you do would like to have maintain some sense of stability within the program, especially since next year, because we're ending the COVID seasons, we don't have any, we're not going to have this like huge number of grad transfers that Mus really took advantage of. And so, you know, I think it was important to get a guy like Patton, but you know, as opposed to, you know, even DJ Wagner, I think it's doubtful that he'll play more than one more year of college basketball. It's possible, but I would not bet on it. So that's the benefit. But yeah, I'm with you there. I think, you know, the kind of the, just the talent athleticism upgrade would be nice to have. Before we finish for today, I do want to mention that a former guest on our show had some news in the last couple of weeks. Doug Gottlieb, who was here, you know, right around the time that Andy Enfield was leaving before we had hired Mus, and joined us on the show, has been named as the new head basketball coach at Green Bay in the Horizon League. This is formerly Wisconsin Green Bay. He's doing that while also continuing his broadcasting career. So I think he's going to still have his radio show on Fox Sports Radio and be the head coach at Green Bay. I think you probably got you probably heard the discussion when he was on. His father was kind of a legendary high school basketball coach in Southern California, here in Orange County. So he's definitely got coaching in his blood, and he's very bright about the game. I think, you know, he's entering it now. He's actually the same age as me. Just maybe a little bit older. We're both born in 1976, but he's getting into this head coaching game late in life. But I wish him all the best, and you never know. I mean, if he figures out how to pull off the right personnel packages, get some NIL, it could be good for him. Nick, you have any thoughts there with Doug?
Super happy for Doug. Really good guy, smart. He knows the current ecosystem and is super plugged in. And you saw all the current coaches that released statements, you know, when the hire was announced, talking about how good of a hire it was. And, you know, definitely wish him all the best and think he'll do well.
Jason, do you have any thoughts?
One of my first times listening to you guys before I was on the podcast myself was listening to the rundown of coaching stuff with Doug Gottlieb. Yeah, I'm happy for him. You know, I think a lot of folks are going to say, are you, you know, why should you be able to keep hosting a radio show every day while still being a D1 head coach? And We'll see if it works out, right? Like, I think when you're hiring at a low major level, you can do a couple of things. You can try to find like the up and coming guy, either from the high school ranks or like a D2, D3 guy. Or, you know, this is another like viable path that you can take if you're an athletic director at one of those schools. Hey, I'm going to make a huge splash. Like, how much press has Green Bay basketball gotten in the last 2 weeks versus how much it's gotten in the last 15 years? So, you know, take a big swing and we'll see. But just in terms of his basketball acumen, I certainly think he knows what he's doing. So it'll be interesting to see how he does.
I think that's a pretty full podcast for the day. Anything else before we get out of here, Nick?
I just want to point out, I think USC will finish higher than 15th in the Big Ten this
year.
Oh,
let's talk so about
just,
that.
I can introduce it. So there was a 24/7 article that picked the Big Ten, and they had UCLA 1, and UCLA 1 is defensible. I mean, I don't know if I'd pick them 1, but, you know, it's very defensible. But I kept scrolling to, you know, look for the USC name, and it was like 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, 10, 11, and finally get down to 15 to see our name at 15. So, you know, it was written by an Illinois alum and whatnot. I'm not saying there's any bias there, but I think Illinois is outside the top 50 in the Bart Torvik rankings, and SC's in the top 25. So, I think it just, obviously people have their own opinions and they're completely entitled to them. But it just goes to show how I think these sites like 24/7, when you're so dependent on rating these transfers and high school kids, either, you know, the transfers based on either their high school ranking or their NBA draft potential, you know, both the NBA mock drafts and the high school rankings are a profit center for 24/7 sports. And then you look at USC's roster and you're kind of devoid of a lot of the top high school kids and, you know, don't have the first round NBA draft talents either. So, you know, I'm sure that played a role, but, you know, I do think SC will finish higher than 15th this year.
Yeah. I chalked this up to the fact this guy probably just didn't really want to spend time evaluating the players on our roster and just went with like the 24/7 rankings for transfers. It's hard to like look at, like, I mean, Illinois is a perfect example, right? Because like their best two players might be like Kylan Boswell and Trey White. So you're like, is that team really gonna finish that much higher in the Big Ten? Or I mean, honestly, looking at Oregon, if they don't have Nafale Dante, I mean, you know, that team is like, you know, Shellstad's good. I think he's going to be probably less effective in the Big Ten just because of physicality. And, you know, I like TJ Bamba, but like it, you know, I don't know, it really seemed like it was such a superficial kind of analysis of the teams.
Couple things. Number one, I wanted to put my money where my mouth is on some of this stuff, so I decided to do my own projection of the Big Ten. I took that article and I just weighted it for starters minutes and bench minutes. I did the five starters and then three bench guys, and then using kind of average minutes played for starters versus bench players. It's not perfect, but just to kind of see like, how does this shake out? I used box plus minus from Sports Reference for every one of these players, and then kind of projected out the freshmen based on what other freshmen similar recruiting ranks would have done. So I did my own 1 through 18, and Bart Torvik has USC 5th, and I have USC 5th. So little consensus forming there, and then, you know, obviously 247 has us 15th. Another one that was interesting, I had Northwestern 8th, Torvik has them 7th, 247 has them 17th. They lose Boo Booey, everyone knows this. They return like the rest of their team. They were a pretty good team last year, and they brought in a couple transfers that can play, some kind of like offense first guys that can be kind of a reasonable facsimile. Obviously, you're not going to be quite as good, but are you really going from like the the top end of the conference and a tournament caliber team to the second worst team based off of the loss of one player. Just like a couple of things in that ranking that were just kind of like, I don't know. So one last hot take for me, because I've been tracking this as all of the rosters filled out and I was waiting for USC to fill its last spot to kind of round this out, if you will. I think USC is going to be better than UCLA, guys. Like, I've been looking at it. I've been looking at many different statistical ways of looking at it. Evan Mia, box plus minus, the SB Unfurled rankings, the Torvik, Porpagatu, or whatever it's called rankings. We're better than them in every single one of them right now. Like, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe their starting lineup is, like, even. Maybe you could make a case in one out of eight systems it said their stars were better, but like I just don't see it. I think we might be better, but we'll have to see. I don't know. To see first versus 15th, I have USC fifth and UCLA ninth. So, you know, lots of different ways to skin a cat, but we'll have to put our money where our mouth is, and we can track at the end of the season Torvik versus me versus this guy and see we'll stack rank the Ken Palms and see who was closer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jason, we have a Nick and I had started, although we didn't follow up on, a Big Ten specialty podcast that will cover the entire conference now that SC's moving over. And this might be a great maybe we'll do a true debut episode over the summer, not on football because we have to do football as well, but like just doing our basketball projections for the conference once everyone is kind of like, we get the last of the transfer portal, you know, the NBA draft stuff settled and last of the transfer portal stuff out. I have, like, we talked about this before, a lot of how you view UCLA, I think, boils down to how you view guys like Dominic Harris. Like, it's odd to me that Mick seems so like hell bent on bringing him in. Now maybe it'll be the case that Dylan and, cause I think like it seems that the only centerpiece of this team, you know, for UCLA is really Dylan Andrews. So you've got the point guard in place, then you're just building around him. And now you have the situation between Lazar Stefanovic, Sebastian Mack, and Kobe Johnson, Sky Clark, and now Dominic Harris. And the real question I have is, like, rather than bringing in one surefire guy to complement Dylan Andrews from an offensive standpoint, they brought in a lot of, like, they brought in like three or four guys that are all kind of middling. You know, we talked about that, Nick. I mean, like, why not just spend the money and get like the one guy you really want instead of getting all these guys that are kind of like, I'd say maybe at the same level.
Right. And I think, you know, Jason kind of outlined some of the criticism on USC's NIL allocation, just with the last few roster spots, like, you know, why don't you pony up for one guy and have a solid rotation of like eight or nine, as opposed to spreading that out through spots like, you know, 10, 11, 12 and whatnot. So, you know, I think there's some criticism on both the USC side and the UCLA side. You know, then again, when you see the reports of Great Osabor getting $2 million, like maybe the market for the top guys was just so inflated and insane. But, you know, with the UCLA thing, I do agree with you. And they've got a lot of interesting pieces, I guess, but not a lot of like two-way guys. You know, Dominic Harris, like you mentioned, he's more of just a shooter. The thing that's really crazy to me is if you look at Bart Torvik's projections for UCLA, he's got him 12th, which is pretty high, I think, but he's got him as the number five defense. You know, last year they were the number 50 defense, and that was with Adem Bona. He was one of the best shot blockers in the country and also rebounded. Like he anchored them. I look at the personnel and like, I don't know how they get to a top 10 defense with this group. I guess like Kobe Johnson would have to average like five steals a game or something. And because I'm just not seeing it with Tyler Bilodeau and Eric Daly. and Sky Clark, Dominic Harris. I mean, these guys were either bad defenders or, you know, non-playmaker impact guys on that end of the floor. So that's super rich, the number five defense. And, you know, maybe they get to a number 30, 39 offense. I don't know. I mean, Dylan Andrews can't really shoot. Sebastian Bach, I think, has a long way to go. And, you know, we'll see if these guys like Dom Harris and Sky Clark and whatnot from losing programs, you know, figure it out at UCLA under Mick. And, you know, Mick's not known as an offensive coach. You know, he's had success with more of those ISO guys like Jaime Jaquez and Johnny Juzang, where he could give them the ball and say, you know, go score or go attack a matchup. But you're not going to want to do that with Dylan Andrews and Sky Clark.
Right. Chase, I know you want to end the podcast, but open. I did the same minutes allocation. I didn't do the minutes allocation super deep dive for all 18 teams. That was like a separate exercise, but I did try to do it for USC and for UCLA. And I looked at what David Woods, you know, from Bro Online posted in terms of what he thought the minutes allocation should be for their team, just to get a sense for like where they think the minutes are coming from. And then I made it better. I like looked at who the analytically better players were and like tweaked it in their favor to try to see like if there was something I was missing. Cause when I first did it with his numbers, I was like, whoa, this is like not that good. And so then I was like, okay, you know, let's give Sky Clark less minutes. Like let's, you know, pump up some of the, you know, analytical darlings, you know, the Bilodeaux and the Stefanovic's, to give them like slightly more minutes and see like if we can make these numbers get to, you know, something resembling what everyone's picking to be like the best team in the league next year. And I still don't see it. I have them ranked. I kind of backed into what I would think their KenPom would be for this season. And I have it about 80th. And I have them at the number 60 offense and the number 115 defense. I think they are a worse defensive team than they were last year. And they certainly, you know, I don't understand how Bart Torvik's getting to those numbers he has. And by the way, for USC, I had us as the 10th ranked offense and the 130th ranked defense. Another hot take for me was we may have the best offense and the worst defense in the conference next year. But if the offense is substantially better than the defense, you can still make that into a tournament team. So great offense, bad defense, plus high tempo means like lots of very, very fun shootouts coming next year, I think.
One thing on UCLA, I really do like a couple of the later acquisitions they got. Like I like Eric Daly. I like Bilodeaux quite a bit. And I like William Kyle. I guess those three will play a lot of the minutes at the four and the five. But I like them kind of like, I like them as like role players on your team. You know, the fact that like they have both Bilodeaux and Daly, like, so I don't think Daly is going to play as much as he probably should. They still have a Day Mara who maybe Mara will really develop great and be like, you know, like a, all of a sudden he'll be like a Zach Edey. I mean, that could be something that really turns things around. But their backcourt players, I really strongly dislike. You know, Sebastian Mack on his own is like a very controversial player, but like I think he was thrust into a position last year where he like had to take all these shots because UCLA just had no offense and had no like alpha to take shots when they needed them. And I guess he took a lot of bad ones, but like he could get to certain spots on the floor and that impressed me. Sky Clark does not impress me, and I don't know what minutes he's going to take, if he's going to try to play, if he's going to steal minutes from Dylan Andrews, or he's just going to try to play along with Dylan Andrews. I'm not sure. I don't like Stefanovic. And you know, the problem with Kobe, I mean, we know Kobe, right? So like Kobe will get a ton of steals, but he doesn't necessarily make your defense like statistically better over the course of a season. And the reason for that is he takes a lot of chances. And he will give up threes when he's like cheating over looking for a steal. So now I'm sure Mick will try to cut that out of him, you know, and that's going to be a big battle for him, whether or not he can still get all those steals while not cheating on defense. And that's going to be a big part of it. So the issue for them is just, it just seems like a lot of bodies in that backcourt. You know, we're kind of just we're almost the opposite. We don't have enough bodies in the backcourt And they've got too many. But you know, I'm not a fan of having a team where you have all these guards that are just like high volume guys that don't really, you know, do much on the efficiency side. So, and they're not really like, you know, big time playmakers. I don't see a big upside for Sky Clark or Dominic Harris or Lazar Stevanovic. I mean, that just, you know, they're not my kind of guys. I could see like Sebastian Mack being like a senior in college and like averaging 20 points a game just because he's really good at getting into spots and getting by guys. But you know, in general, I'm very skeptical of that. I mean, we haven't mentioned Trent Perry. Okay. Long podcast, but I, you know, this is the day to do it because I've got plenty of free time. Anything else before we get out of here, guys?
You know, just from my end, you touched on the Trent Perry thing. We can get into that whole decision on a future pod. That's a whole topic in its own right with UCLA over the scholarship numbers. But yeah, like you said, you're higher on Mac, I think, than David Woods, because he has him at 6 minutes a game and has Trent Perry at 0 minutes a game for a McDonald's All-American. So yeah, I think the USC minute allocation will be really interesting, but you know, the UCLA minute allocation might be even more interesting.
Yeah. One team we should also start to talk about, we haven't even mentioned, is Washington. Their minute allocation is going to be interesting in the front court because they did get Grado Sabor, and they have Frank Kapanong coming back next season, right? So, like, I've seen projections where I think on 24/7 the guy was like projecting that both of them were going to play at the same time. I cannot imagine that's the case. I mean, trying to play Osabor at the four with Kapanong, I do not see that. But that's a team that has some interesting. It got Tyler Harris from Portland, so they have some interesting players there as well. I don't think they have quite the level of talent that Hopkins was able to bring in and not capitalize on. But that could be a decent team, and they've certainly structured themselves to have the bigs up front. So that's maybe in the future podcast we will cover them as well. Jason, do you have anything else?
No, I think another topic for next time, just like, We kind of looked high level, you know, offensively, defensively, what are we missing? But I think we should dive a little deeper just in terms of like a full analysis of this roster, in terms of like, what will it excel at and what will it struggle with? Because I think it will be really kind of instructive as we go into next season to kind of think through like, okay, now we've got the 13 guys. We think we should be good on offense, probably won't be as good on defense, but why, right? Like, is it, What skill sets do we have and not have? And that could be interesting next level examination of this roster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, maybe we'll do that next time. Until then, fight on, everybody.
Fight on.
Fight on.